From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory. Welcome to Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. It looks like we are at least on the tail end of one of the worst winters we've had here in the Carolinas in a long time. Not that we had bitter cold or tons of snow or ice or anything like that, but rather it really became an issue of longevity. It seems it started getting very cold back Thanksgiving, before Thanksgiving, and has pretty much stayed just that way for weeks on end until this past week. It's warmed up nicely, and that's warmed the hearts of gardeners far and wide. Anxious to turn some dirt, get something planted, gardeners were out in force this past weekend, and for good reason. Gardening remains one of, if not the most popular hobbies in the country. So we've called on some of the leading authorities on backyard gardening in our own backyard to get us kick-started. David Blackley is a gardening expert, activist, enthusiast, teacher, and most importantly, a gardening promoter and recruiter to get others involved to see for themselves just how good soil is good for the soul. David's a lifelong resident of Matthews, no stranger on the airways either on the subject of gardening. He's often on other radio stations in town talking about it, and has even had some experience on television years ago, a daily feature on WBTV, In the Garden with David Blackley. David is owner-operator of the historic Rarity in Matthews, and I say Rarity because Renfro Hardware is truly a throwback to those times when everything, and I do mean everything, was available at the local hardware store. As anyone who's ever been there can attest, Renfro's Hardware still has everything. In fact, if they don't, you probably don't need it. David Blackley, good to see you.
Good to see you again, Chris.
Also joining us today, Don Bokelhide. He is a master gardener, teaches food gardening at CPCC, and is a test gardener for Organic Gardening Magazine. Don, what does that mean?
Every year they send me some wonderful seeds a year before they come onto the market, so you can buy them down at Renfro's.
Yeah.
And I test them. I grow them in test plots, especially at Reedy Creek Park Community Garden.
And both of you guys are just in the business of getting people to get outside and to grow a garden in your backyard, David.
Well, sure. It is the most popular hobby in the world, and you, Chris, are a great gardener, and that attests to the fact that everybody can do it.
that is pretty good testament to that fact. And however, playing the role of the professional skeptic for this program is yours truly. I want you to convince me, now that that grocery stores, people have been clamoring for locally grown vegetables for years now, and the local grocery stores have caught on to that idea and now are offering what are locally grown veggies. So why bother? Why should I bother going into the backyard and putting myself through all this trouble?
Well, I contend that the gardeners are the ones that have forced the grocery stores to wake up and carry local produce. Certainly the farmers markets have, and generally the best customers at local farmers markets and the local produce are gardeners.
And, you know, I'll see your question and I'll raise you.
Okay.
Backyard? Why just backyard? Why not your front yard? Why not that strip that's alongside your driveway in beautiful full sun where you're spending money to grow what kind of shrubs?
Mm.
You can't eat them. You can't eat that lawn. I hear you have a beautiful lawn. That's an art form in itself. So you've got all this space, and if it's too shady, you know, we got lots of trees in Charlotte. You've got a community garden right down the street, around the corner now. So why not? And do you really think you're going to have a better time on that treadmill watching Fox News, puffing away, or out in the garden in the beautiful sunlight, growing some of your own food that's going to taste better than anything that you buy? I'll wager for any grocery store. There are some wonderful local farmers markets, but even our farmers markets, you have to be careful. Does local mean 600 miles away? That's what I heard for one local grocery chain.
Mm.
That's not as local as walking out your front door and picking it yourself.
Okay. I was taught a long time ago to ask a doctor who they see when sick, to ask an insurance agent how much insurance do they carry, to ask a stockbroker where are they investing their money. So my first question to you, what's in your garden, David Blackley?
Well, I brought some samples this morning that I picked with the flashlight before, probably a little
before the sun came up.
Chickweed and henbit mixed in with it. But here's a bag of mixed greens. You know what greens are. It's mustards and rape and kale and turnips all mixed together. You cook them down. There's no fresher than that. Here's some spring onions. All of this was planted in the fall. You can chop up an onion top. You can do anything with it. Broccoli. These are the florets, the little side shoots, the Brussels sprouts. All of this picked. Spinach. A butternut squash. We've got a few left. You can't have that one. You can have the rest of this. It's one of our last ones. Popcorn. We eat popcorn every few nights. It's easy to grow enough popcorn for a family just in the size of a twin bed or a small bed. I do grow a little citrus, and I put it outside and then bring it in a little tiny greenhouse. So I've got lemons and oranges and little loquats. Here's some parsley, this dried, some dried basil, some dried hot peppers that my wife dries. So it's easy to eat out of your backyard, and this is so simple.
Are there things that you are literally picking out of your garden, though, in the month of January?
Every bit here was picked this morning and was the same in January, except when the snow was on the ground, a little hard to find it.
Yeah.
But sure, and coming off of a really tough winter, as you said, it got cold fast. And went from warm to cold early in the season when the plants weren't quite mature. So, sure, it's not hard to grow stuff year-round. It takes a while. We tell customers don't aim for even a B-plus garden until about your second or third year. You've got to learn.
And there are things that you can do in preparation for your garden in January.
Absolutely.
Which
are? You could do. Well, certainly if you've got a bunch of weeds and all growing on, just begin to start taking that off. Take a soil sample. Send it off to NC State. It's free. Find out what you need. And go ahead and harvest whatever you're still eating. You've got to make a point to kill things, too, when you're a gardener. Eventually, I'm going to have to mow down all my greens because I got to make room for something else.
For the spring crop and for the summer crop.
Sure.
Talk to me about soil testing, Don. Why is that important?
Our soils here, and we moved here 20 years ago from California. From a completely different kind of soil. I've learned to love these southern soils. If you take care of them and manage them right, you add compost, you can have the most beautiful garden you could ever imagine. There's nothing wrong inherently with red clay. What you've got to do, though, is be very mindful about how you work with it. Mm. One thing that we have are soils that tend to be acidic, and vegetables like a little more neutral, a sweeter soil. So to correct that, you add ground up limestone. But to know exactly how much to add, you need to do a soil test. They're free in North Carolina. It is the best deal in the state.
And how do you go about that?
You go to either your cooperative extension office or the Soil and Water Conservation District. They're both housed in the old, or Renfro's Hardware.
They have little boxes.
I mean, honestly, when you said that they've got everything at Renfro's, they do have everything. I mean, honestly, it's the greatest place. You know.
But it's just like going to the doctor and getting your cholesterol checked every so often.
Yeah.
You just need to get your soil checked.
That's right. And you send off the box to the state soil testing lab, and they'll send you back information that tells you exactly what you need to be adding for a vegetable garden.
Either adding or subtracting?
It's mostly a question of adding. Our soils in North Carolina have been farmed pretty intensively for a couple hundred years. There's one statistic I heard that since the mid-1700s, we've lost 1.5 meters of our topsoil. So especially in urban areas, it's a question of being really good soil stewards and taking care of the soil.
And why did we lose the topsoil?
From farming practices that weren't very wise, and from looking at the soil as something that you simply can take stuff from. We've got this beautiful, I wish people could see this, I mean, these beautiful vegetables.
Well, you can see this, Don. Let me tell you, our producer just handed me the note that you can see pictures of David's harvest, what he just alluded to, the greens, the butternut squash, the spinach, the broccoli, the Brussels sprouts, the onions. Go to the Facebook page at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks, and you'll see a photograph that was just posted on there of all that David Blackley was just bragging
Isn't
about.
Technology amazing.
it really is.
But, you know, when you look at that, wouldn't you two guys agree that Where it came from is most important. It came from the soil.
Mm.
And taking good care of our soils, that's one of the most important things gardening's about.
What else? You talked about composting. I do want to get a lot into that. And that's taking yard waste, grass clippings, leaves, other dead plants, piling them up, then throwing some kitchen scraps on top of them, everything but oily things, coffee grounds, eggshells, leftover vegetables, whatever the case may be, piling them up in a backyard. A little bit more about that, David.
Well, if you're eating material from your garden that's organic or that's carbon, it makes sense you've got to replace something. And unless your outhouse is right over the top of your garden, you're not replacing much that you're consuming. So you've got to put leaves or a cover crop or scraps. Sometimes you have to buy a compost, but I'm a big advocate of using leaves. You got to replenish, and that's what the farming practices that Don's alluded to, that we didn't understand that for the first couple hundred years around here, and it all washed away. So
literally washed away in the Midwest during the Great Dust Bowl years of several decades ago, it actually blew away.
Sure.
That's right. And in Mecklenburg County, you've got a great program set up where you can actually learn to make compost. Nadine Ford and her group over at Waste Reduction will tell you how to take those bags of leaves you've been putting by the curb and turn them into the black gold for your garden. And it's an easy, it's a fun process. They have classes all the time, even have a master composter training program to train people to teach others how to make compost.
At Compost Central?
Well, Compost Central is where we do it on a massive scale. I mean, we've got a great composting operation out there. But this is for your backyard. If we would all make compost in our backyard and grow some of our own vegetables, the environmental benefits would be enormous.
Well, the Charlotte Mecklenburg Utilities Department is always advising us to make sure that our leaves don't go down into the into the drainage, the sewage drainage ditches, because it clogs everything up. A great alternative to that.
And that's absolutely right. And you remember that some of those draining ditches used to be creeks with frogs and, you know, different kinds of critters living in them and even fish. You think of vegetable gardening as being something that serves you. This is back to your question, why bother to do it? Well, yeah, you get riches for your table, the most delicious food that you can eat, but you're also doing something for the environment, something really important, something that's hands-on. You're not saying, hey, and you in those other countries, you do this and that. You're doing something yourself right here.
Some of the words that you guys are choosing to use here, we're talking about backyard gardening. You guys are doing a really good job of romanticizing it. Is it worth romanticizing, in your opinion?
I think we saw this rebound in gardening started 8, 10, 12 years ago. And it was for the health benefits more than anything else. If you get canned green beans, the sodium is so high in it that a lot of us learn that that's not good for your blood pressure. And the health benefits extend to children. More people are growing radishes or lettuce for children to eat to teach them that eating out of their backyard is okay. These Brussels sprouts here are fabulous. I hated Brussels sprouts till after I was married, because the school Brussels sprouts they used to serve in CMS and everywhere else were horrible.
Because they were probably trucked in from some faraway state.
And overcooked.
Yeah.
I won't eat them unless they're perfect and they're right in your backyard. That's perfect.
That's David Blackley. He's a gardening expert, owner of Renfro's Hardware down in Matthews. We also have Don Bokelhide with us from Organic Gardening Magazine, also teaches food gardening at CPCC. And we're going to continue our discussion on Charlotte Talks right after this.
Charlotte Talks will continue in just a moment on 90.7 FM WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Signature Healthcare, offering concierge medical care, providing patients with 24/7 physician access, individualized attention, executive physicals, and same-day appointments. SignatureHealthcare.org. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, education from the outside in. Education has problems, but in Charlotte, there are several groups working to provide students the resources needed to succeed. We'll talk with people from some of the organizations striving for improved education for students in our region, and we'll talk about their view on how our area schools are doing and what they can do better to provide quality education. That's when Charlotte Talks tomorrow morning at 9 on 90.7 FM WFAE. And if you love food, check out WFA Eats, our food blog, for composting and gardening tips to food news and culture Go to WFAE.org/WFAEats.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, unfunded state and local pension liabilities are projected as high as $3 trillion. House lawmakers are pushing for greater disclosure, the looming public pension crisis, implications for state budget battles.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Plackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our discussion today, backyard vegetable gardening, because it is indeed that time of the year. In fact, David Blackley, you had a busy Saturday this past Saturday. I came into the store. You were just overloaded. Yeah.
The last couple of weeks, probably the busiest 2 weeks of February we've ever seen. That includes the snow weeks. Everybody is out. We're dry right now. We're actually very dry, so it's very easy to till. And even what we call the big gardeners, the people that have tractors and big tillers, are tilling, and the soil's working up the best it ever has.
Yep. I was out yesterday on a tractor all day.
Isn't it nice?
It was beautiful.
It makes you wish we better have some rain, though, in May and June.
Yeah, we do, which does lead to this problem, though. I mean, people are going to need two things for their garden. They're going to need sunshine, and they're going to need water. And if we don't get the rain, what's the alternative, Don?
There are two alternatives. I mean, if you live in a, you know, you'll have water at your house. If you want to start a community garden, make sure you have a ready source of water. Putting a vegetable garden takes just about the same as a lawn, about an inch a week, roughly. So you can eat that food. Environmentally, there's nothing wrong with lawns if they're done right. I know you have a great lawn, Chris.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm here. I wouldn't say that, but anyway.
But anyway, so you need to have the water. Now, there are some ways that you can harvest rainwater, and that makes a lot of sense. And another, if you do it right. And another thing that you can do is take very good care of your soil. By adding that compost and that organic matter, you're increasing the ability of your soil to hang on to water.
To absorb it and hang on to it for a longer period of time.
And, of course, another thing you can do with those leaves, they're nice and free, chop them up and use them as mulch.
Yeah.
A mulch is a covering that goes over the top of the soil. That keeps the soil temperature even, and it prevents loss through evaporation.
Talk to me about harvesting water.
Well, harvested water makes a lot of sense, or at least the way you arrange your rows, even collecting rainwater that falls. It just doesn't make much sense to take water out of Mount Lionel Lake and pipe it and treat it and pump it all the way to the other end of the county and dump it on the ground. So you try to have rain barrels or at least an open garbage can under a rain gutter downspout and then just scoop it out with a watering can so the mosquitoes don't get it. Just simple things.
Yeah, Don?
Thanks to Organic Gardening Magazine, the Urban Ministry Center's garden was able to install a large cistern to capture rainwater that fell on the roof of the center. That enabled us to keep going without using city water all the way through that drought a couple of years ago. It's a simple tank. These technologies, Rich Deming, who does some work around town, has come up with a very interesting way of recycling old containers to make a simpler version of a rain harvesting system. NC State has a program. This is something all of us should get behind.
But one thing that I am concerned about, though, is that it becomes a hotbed of mosquito activity.
Well,
open container of water is, in fact, a breeding ground for mosquitoes. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if you're using an open container, you need to control that by controlling access. And then organic gardeners have long used something called BT. It's a kind of bacteria, naturally occurring soil bacteria, that controls certain insects in their larval stage. There is one now, they make it like little donuts, that controls mosquito larvae. Now, a big cistern that's put in properly, though, has no way for the mosquitoes to get into it.
To get into it.
Right. Exactly.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so they therefore can't. Back to the BT, though, the donut shape. Are you talking about dropping that into an open container of
water? Yeah, it just floats around.
It floats around.
Mm-hmm. You can buy it at Renfro's Hardware.
Well, I'm sure you get a lot of places.
Talk to me a little bit about the advantage nutrition-wise that locally grown food has over food that is shipped in from someplace else.
I'm no food scientist. I can't quantitatively say that it's more nutritious, but I can certainly tell from when I eat something that it tastes better and it's healthier and fresher. It's not limp and discolored. There are a lot of blogs and websites that have definitive information on this spinach is better than that spinach, but I think you're trying to get too technical. The point of a backyard garden is just to know that you're doing something, that you're in control of your food, you can pick it exactly when you want it, and if you don't have any in your backyard, you still can go to the grocery store. I'm not saying we won't go to the grocery store, but it gives you a better sense of what's in season, for that matter.
Well, David, I think there's one other thing that you're talking about adding and subtracting a little earlier.
Sure.
I think David's right. The jury's out on the nutritional value, though. There's some indication that homegrown food, especially grown in good organic soil, is more nutritious. Allison Minery at the health department is kind of an expert on that. However, you know exactly what was sprayed on that food.
Mm.
Did you spray it with anything? Probably not. You're using good organic techniques.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you know it's safe. When this stuff is trucked in, you don't know unless you're willing to pay that high premium for or certified organic food.
Sure.
And in terms of bacteria and stuff like that, you can be sure of exactly what's happened to that food from when you pick it to when it goes in your mouth.
Let's go to we're going to invite folks to give us a call if they want to. And talk with both of our gardening experts, Don Bokelhide, who teaches food gardening at CPCC and also is a test gardener for Organic Gardening Magazine. David Blackley, expert on backyard gardening I've known for a long time, owner and operator of Renfro's Hardware down in Matthews. You conduct two classes a month to get people involved in gardening.
We do two in February and two in March, mainly because we just don't have the time to give the one-on-one that we'd like to with customers. So we do them on Thursday nights, and they're always well received. Then we do them again in the fall so that we have about 3 hours to talk about gardening with people, and it works.
This is after the store closes down, and you just move things around,
put chairs and have all these props and have a great time. Every class is different. You only need to take one, but it's just different because of the people.
If you have any questions for our master gardeners here today, please give us a call, 704-926-9323. That's 704-926-WFAE or 1-800-603-9323. WFAE.org is our website. Jane emailed us with this question, some ideas and tips on removing grass to begin a vegetable garden.
Grass wants lots of sun, so you can shade it out. I mean, that's the first thing I think that organic gardeners do is they put down a layer of something like newspaper or cardboard and shade it out. You can dig grass up and pick up the sods, turn them upside down and compost them. After a couple of years, that's good. Now, but I'm talking about fescue, which is an easier kind of grass to get rid of. If you have Bermuda,
good luck.
Well, you face a real quandary, and that quandary is, should I use Roundup or not on it? What do you think, David?
I generally just suggest people cover it up with some black poly or a piece of plywood or cardboard or something and just try to smother it out. And then that first year, just be diligent about pulling it and not spray, just not start off getting in the habit of spraying.
And what do you think about that, Don?
I concur with that. And
start
I have
small and start, don't make yes. a 40-acre garden or you'll never keep the grass out
the
of it.
The absolute first law, I think, for gardeners, especially when you're beginning, is keep it small.
Meaning 20 by 20?
That's big.
That's big.
That's good. Okay, very good.
10 by 20 is
plenty of grass. And you
we've
get
already
that.
Established. Now all we're doing is negotiating price.
Well, at one point when I was working for the Peace Corps, we were teaching people to grow gardens that were 1 meter by 1 meter. And growing greens in a garden like that can make an appreciable difference in childhood nutrition, nutrition for the elderly. So 10 by 10, that's nine times as big. Yeah. And you can grow quite a lot of interesting stuff. Make that your first year. You're a big success. Double it the next year.
And especially if you're going to go raised bed versus just ground level.
Sure.
Well, yeah, and that raises an interesting point. Plants don't care.
Right.
They don't know whether they're in a raised bed condo or whatever. By raised beds, you don't just mean raising the soil level. You mean framing it, Chris, right? Mm,
correct.
And building boxes around soil has some advantages and disadvantages. One thing you're going to have to know is it costs more, and you're going to need to fill that up with good soil. Where are you going to get that good soil? By starting with what you've got and compost, you can save money, and then later if you want to add boxes,
sure.
Knock yourself out.
Do a flat garden to begin with and just learn how to garden.
Let's go to the phone lines. Gina in Charlotte. Gina, thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, you all.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a 7-year-old, and every time we go to Lowe's, he wants to just buy seed.
Right on.
So now that I'm listening to you all today while I'm exercising, I'm definitely going to buy some seeds.
Great.
Now, I wanted to say that I went to a country called Belize back in 2008.
Mm-hmm. In Central America, yep.
Yes, and because they grow a lot of citrus, I used to see the trucks going down the road, and, you know, we'd go down the road, and to the left we'd smell this patch. And it was, I later found out it was all the orange waste, you know, the peels and the, mm-hmm. all that. And they used as compost to continue to grow what they're growing for the oranges and limes and things. But that wouldn't be good for vegetables, would it?
I have no idea. I've never used citrus waste. I think any waste will rot down fine. I don't know about the pH of it, but I doubt you'll find that kind of waste around Charlotte.
Well, but you do available. Have people that, you know, eat their grapefruits sure. and their
oh,
lemons
yeah.
and their oranges
oh,
and they're taking the peels. And
what happens in composting is critters actually eat the stuff in the compost pile.
Sure.
It's not a passive process. You're kind of, people who are making compost are kind of like farmers. They're just farming in, you know, microscopic livestock.
Microbes, not rats. We're talking
not microbes, exactly. They grind it up. So, in what comes out of the end of compost, whatever you put in the front end, tends to be very stable, black material. Again, I would suggest, you know, putting your citrus waste in with all the other things and lots of leaves, and check with Nadine to take a class.
Just be diverse, not just too much of one thing.
Okay.
Very good. Gina, thanks for calling
okay,
in.
Thank you.
And
thank
as opposed
you.
To going to Lowe's, consider going to Matthews. A tweet from Greg. I have a small suburban lot. Talk a little bit about container gardening, patio gardening.
Again, plants are very, very adaptable. And I would say, David gave me a point there, like I'm supposed to talk about it, but if you want to see some good container gardens growing vegetables, go to Renfro's Hardware. What they've done is they've taken 50-gallon drums, cut them in half, and started growing. You grow all kinds of things.
All kinds of things. We basically try to – variety choice is important. We try to show people what you can grow and what you can't grow in a container, but everybody picks containers too small. You got to have a big container or you're just – you're just kind of wasting your time.
Yeah, lettuce, spinach, cabbages,
anything
tomatoes,
that you're
peppers.
The plant, anything that you're eating the leaf, like lettuce, spinach, those kind of things, is always a good choice. An herb, anything that grows a fruit, like a tomato or a corn, you have to sort of pick your variety. So if you're eating the plant, it's great to go in a container. If you're eating some offspring of the plant, you better get some advice.
Okay, and let's settle this right now. Backyard gardeners should not be messing with corn.
Depends on how big your backyard is.
Agree or disagree. If we're talking about the small garden that we alluded to a few moments ago,
but
don't mess with corn.
Mess with popcorn. That's easy to grow. Children like it. It doesn't take up a lot of room. And you learn what a corn plant looks like. You learn the silken and the tosselin and all that sort of thing. And it pollinates a little easier. So you can grow a small patch of popcorn and have something worthwhile to save.
Don?
Well, in a space-intensive garden, corn isn't going to be giving you a real high amount of productivity for a small amount of space, especially in terms of nutrients. But look around if you want to grow some corn. You know, the main thing I think in gardening is grow what you like.
Yeah.
I mean, grow what interests you. If you want to start with corn, in a year or two, you'll be trying some other things.
Can a case not be made that there are so many more farmers markets today than there were just a couple of short years ago that you can grow some things and that which you can't grow? Go to get it from the
Absolutely.
Farmer's market.
Absolutely. And there's some great farmer's markets to support out there. Atherton, that's a great one. The one next to you.
I spend a lot of time convincing customers not to grow certain things. Don't, if you're in a backyard garden situation, don't do watermelons, don't do cantaloupes, don't
right.
do corn. Do the high productivity plants, squash, tomatoes, okra, where you get a lot of yield out of it. And even cabbage, for that matter. You can buy a pretty good local cabbage. You can grow cabbage in the winter, but I wouldn't mess with it in the summer unless you've got a little bigger area.
Back to the phone lines. Cliff in Gastonia. Cliff, thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. I'm really enjoying this program. Like I said, I've had a vegetable garden for about 5 or 6 years, and the kids are involved. They get just as excited as I do once it starts warming up.
What's your secret?
Well,
I've got a 15-year-old.
They're not teenagers yet.
No, they're 7 and 10.
Oh,
you're lucky. Enjoy it, man.
Wait till they're 15 or 16.
Yeah, I turn the TV off.
Yeah.
But what I'm calling about, I don't put any kind of chemicals in our garden. My wife has cancer, so I'm real, you know, careful about not putting any chemicals in there.
Great.
But we've had grubs in there. The kids like picking them out, but I don't want them in there. How do I get them out without putting any kind of pesticides or whatever? Any kind of weed block I can put down way low, or what do you think?
Bluebird birdhouse.
Really?
That's a very good idea.
Great idea.
Bluebird birdhouse. Put it right next to the garden. It'll attract the bluebirds, and the bluebirds will eat the grubs.
They'll dig down in the garden?
Yeah, they will sometimes. And, of course, if you cultivate, which cultivate is a word a lot of people don't understand, if you cultivate and sort of stir up your garden, you're going to bring a few of them up. Grubs are not a real problem. They're down there mostly eating organic matter. They're not like something that's going to cut off the root of the plant as much as other kinds of grubs. The turf grubs, like in your lawn, or Japanese beetle grubs, with the garden grubs usually are not such a problem.
Yeah, yeah. These are white with like a red head. What kind
you
of
just bite their head off and they'll never bother you again.
And they're good protein if you want to eat them.
Just give every kid a nickel for every one they find.
Seriously, David's point about cultivation makes a lot of sense. In large-scale agriculture right now, there's this technique called no-till, where you never turn the soil. That doesn't necessarily apply to vegetable gardens, where you're growing very short-duration plants, annuals and biennials. So this time of year is a great time to be preparing your soil. One thing you can do is simply take a shovel and turn it over and let that cold weather work on those grubs and other things. And that also gets that makes them available to the bluebirds and other birds. They'll come right in behind you as you're spading your garden.
Sure
okay,
will.
Well, we have bird feeders, too. We do have some bluebirds that come, so I'll try your advice there.
Good luck.
Very, very good. Thanks for calling
thank
in,
you.
Cliff.
You guys are doing a great information. Thank you.
Thanks. Now, David, what should we be doing right now? Don just talked about getting your soil ready. I mean, what are some things that we can be doing right now?
Right now is a great time to turn your soil. You don't want to work clay soil wet, ever.
If it's, amen.
If it's wet, you're going to damage it.
You're going to make brick.
You're going to make brick and take a couple of years to get rid of it. But it will turn easily with a shovel now. You don't have to stick the shovel all the way in. Just go down a couple inches, flop it over. That takes care of the grubs we've mentioned. It sort of aerates the soil. And just flop it once or twice. And then if you're only wanting tomatoes and squash and all, wait till April 15th to plant. But if you're wanting to do broccoli and lettuce and spinach now, plant it. Put it in the dirt.
You've always advocated that Good Friday, the Friday before Easter, is a traditional day for planting things like squash, tomatoes, peppers, and the like. But Good Friday this year is going to fall on April 22nd,
pretty late.
As opposed to last year where it fell on April the 2nd.
Good Friday dates back to it's really more of the signs and the almanac and the zodiac and the Christian calendar. But Good Friday also was a time when people were off, so we still are busy on Good Friday and Easter Saturday, no matter when it is. But our last frost date is around April 12th in this part of the world. So we just tell people to plant on tax day, April 15th.
And what are they planting again? What do you go put in the ground on that day?
Well, on that particular day, and we have these posters hanging in the store that tells you something to plant every holiday, Halloween, whatever. But this time of year, April 15th, will be the summer crops, tomatoes, peppers, squash, the fun stuff.
David Blackley from Renfro's Hardware, gardening expert down in Matthews, is joining us today, as well as Don Buchelhide, Organic Gardening Magazine, test gardener for Organic Gardening Magazine, also teaches food gardening at CPCC. And we're back with more right after this.
Charlotte Talks returns in just a moment here on 90.7 FM WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and the professional MBA program at USC's Darla Moore School of Business. The Moore School offers an MBA program for working professionals with classes in Charlotte. Information available at 800-950-PMBA. Coming up next at 10 o'clock, in about 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show, the state of public pension plans. By some estimates, unfunded state and local pension liabilities could be as high as $3 trillion. House lawmakers are pushing for greater disclosure, the financial state of public pension funds, and implication for state budget battles. That's next on the Diane Rehm Show here on 90.7 FM, WFAE. More on vegetable gardening in your backyard on Charlotte Talks in just a moment. But if you love food, check out WFA Eats, our food blog. For composting and gardening tips to food news and culture, go to WFAE.org/WFAEats.
The next time you feel like you're being ripped off, just remember this guy. When I go park my car in the street, and I'm not allowed to park, I pay a bribe. When I go issue my son's birth certificate, I need to pay a bribe. It's me, as an average citizen.
I'm Kai Rizdal, trying to change the old Egyptian ways. Next time on Marketplace, it's from APM, American Public Media.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 FM, WFAE.
What David Blackley was just referring to about the calendar, plant things around holidays. We'll get more of an explanation about that. But in the meantime, you folks can go to WFAE.org, navigate around to WFA Eats, and you will find what David Blackley is talking about. What are you talking about? Holiday planting.
We basically have been teaching people for years, and when you get really busy, you need to sort of have people remember from year to year what to do so they're not all asking the same questions. So we've just set up a little calendar. We hand it out. Anybody that comes in that starts with New Year's Day, Valentine's Day, Tax Day.
The ACC tournament.
Yeah.
And you suggest for the ACC tournament that before they settle down for a little bit of basketball, you start tomato and pepper seeds inside.
Start them inside. And a lot of, the lady that called earlier about seeds, a lot of things should be planted by seed instead of by plants just to see the full cycle. But we also say there's something to eat every holiday out of your garden. It's not just planting, but eating. You got to do both.
Before we get too far away from that, though, you had a suggestion about Super Bowl weekend. Peppers, tomatoes, eggplant seeds, but you can also cook up a pot of greens and make a spinach salad to go with chips and beer and that sort of thing.
You do that every Super Bowl without any problem.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Sarah in Charlotte. Sarah, thanks for holding so long.
Oh, sure. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm enjoying your show immensely. He was talking about things that he wouldn't eat as a child, the Brussels sprouts and so forth. I had an experience last summer where I grew broccoli, and my son always gives me kind of a little bit of resistance to eating it, and as we're walking in the house from harvesting it, he's sitting there chomping on it, and I started to say, no, that's for dinner, and then I realized, no, he's eating it, I'm just going to let him eat it.
Smart mommy.
Yeah.
You're wise.
You're wise.
it was just kind of humorous because It is the taste. It does taste so much better out of your own garden. It really does.
Teach them to eat cherry tomatoes, and you'll have a tomato lover for life. Start them young.
Well, and I grow tomatoes every year, and he loves them, and he'll say, oh, I don't want to get that stuff from the grocery store. They're awful. And they are awful.
Your answer, Chris. Why bother? She's a smart mommy, and she's got this child trained, and he's going to be a good eater the rest of his life.
And speaking of nutrition, though, I mean, tomatoes are an excellent source of, potassium.
Potassium,
lycopene, everything.
The cancer fighter.
Do what your grandmother says. Eat your vegetables. She was smart.
And the best place to do it is right out there in the garden. You can grow a sun gold tomato and just sit there and snack off it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Sarah, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for the testimony. David, you mentioned during the break the issue of food security. We've had so many food scares, so many food recalls. The spinach, onions, da-da-da. It goes on and on and on. When you're growing stuff in your own backyard, you don't have to go very far.
That's right.
And there is some security in knowing that it was your hands and whatever.
So if your child's going to eat it right out of the garden, it's okay. The spinach sales, both seeds and plants, tripled that year we had the spinach scare. And they've never dropped off because once people grew spinach, they realized, hey, this isn't so bad. Onions, you can have onions out of your yard about 8 to 9 months of the year. So why would you buy contaminated onions when you can just go out and pull them? And there's another answer to your question, why bother?
Okay, and the cherry tomatoes, you can even do those in a pot, can you not, in a hot house?
The right variety, yes, you can. Tomatoes do well under plasticulture. You can extend the season on them, plasticulture being something to warm the soil with high tunnels, which is a kind of a big...
If you're in the net, my wife just cuts them in half and puts them in the food dryer, the dehydrator, and we have dried cherry tomatoes all winter. Put them on pizzas and...
Food drying and food freezing are great ways to...
Easy.
And we do need to touch on that, the canning, the storing of the vegetables that you grow.
Absolutely. Before leaving food security, though, there's another aspect that where home gardening and community gardening makes a great deal of sense. There are large areas of our city that are called food deserts. That's where all the grocery stores have left, and you have a large group of people who can't get fresh vegetables easily. The best thing is to grow it. Mm. And there are wonderful home gardeners out on the west side in different places where the grocery stores have left. And you also have some community gardens starting up and good community gardening programs. Friendship Trays is starting one. There's the classic one, Charlotte Green. If you don't have a place to garden.
The town of Matthews has a community garden at the
Park and Recreation.
Park and Recreation. There are lots of them around.
Turk on Facebook, on our Facebook page, was asking that very question. How can he learn more about community gardens, where they're located, or how to get one started?
There are many good resources right now, even at the state level. There's a state webpage, and I can send that to your – can I send that?
Yes, please. Yes, to WFAE.
And check with the American Community Gardening Association, www.communitygarden.org. They also have a good list. The state side actually has a list of local ones. There are a number of different organizations starting gardens, community gardens in Charlotte now. Park and Rec is a great place to start. They're the ones that work with the Matthews Garden and large garden near UNCC, the Reedy Creek Park Community Garden.
Just find a neighbor that's got a garden, say, can I help you?
That's absolutely right.
Find a backyard that's sunny and just ask if you can put a garden there.
Yeah, if you can take a corner of it, I should say.
Sure. And look at your church. Churches here have gigantic lawns. Well, how about turning some of that into food?
My church has a nice church garden.
Sardis Presbyterian?
Mm-hmm. They've got one right on the road there.
And of course, we've got schools.
Yeah. Sure.
And school gardening is, look at the Edible Schoolyard out in Berkeley, California. Absolutely a national model. Hey, school gardens make a lot of sense, too.
Here comes a slam dunk from Michelle in Salisbury. Michelle, thanks for calling in.
Yesterday, I planted my peas because I think that's the right time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too early for lettuce and spinach and cabbage? Is it too early for that?
You're right on target. You can plant all of that either by seeds or plants. The danger we run is that we get this string of 65 degree days, and then in March we end up being 17 degrees, which can happen. And that kind of swing is tough.
Last year it got so hot.
It's very true.
That's right. You've got to get this in early, or the season will get hot and it's going to peter out. So your instincts are right.
Good to do lettuce and spinach and all that right now.
Yeah, lettuce and spinach will germinate in cool soils. And so you can direct seed those, especially your leaf lettuces. You may want to look around for plants for cabbage, and they're out there now, some nice ones. There's also a thing you can use that's simple and fairly inexpensive. Again, Renfro's and other places have good sources of it. It's a row cover where you simply put a little cloth over the top of the bed when you need a little extra warmth.
Oh, okay.
Not to mention protection from frost.
And birds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Birds, frost. And I'll remind folks that the Great Blizzard of 1993 was March 10th, the 11th.
Yep.
So we still have that possibility.
We have had a frost, at least in Matthews, as late as May the 8th. So frost is your enemy, but cold is not your enemy with the right choice of plants and varieties.
I got to give a shout out to this gardener. You're doing great. That's exactly you picked exactly the right crops, and I hope you have a really great harvest season.
Your instincts are good.
Thank you.
Michelle, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck on the gardening. Talk to me a little bit about canning, storing, freezing. Hopefully you'll have a surplus from your garden that you can do.
The thing to do with the surplus.
You can't store greens. You can't store mainly a lot of the spring stuff, but you can store and preserve a lot of the summer stuff.
First thing to do with your extras is give it away if you can. Find somebody that would appreciate it or that it is in one of these food deserts, and there are a lot of groups that can take extra produce. We're not real big at our house of doing a whole lot of canning. We do some, but I'd rather just pick something fresh every day. So in the winter, you just eat what's growing in the yard in the winter. You just don't do a lot of canned tomatoes. We do canned tomatoes because my kids like it, but drying, as Don says, is real easy. You can dry a lot of herbs and put them in a little jar and use them all winter. Mm-hmm. Canning classes are taught by Union County Extension and Cabarrus County Extension. They're excellent. It's nothing to be afraid of.
I believe we have someone now in Mecklenburg County.
We may.
Kristen.
We sort of did it for a while without it, but
Right. Terrific new extension agent.
Most people are not going to get to that level, that size of a backyard garden, that they're going to grow so much that they're going to need to store some.
Well, what will happen sometimes is you'll have a surplus. What we found last year was broccoli. We had more broccoli than we could keep up with. So we ended up freezing it, and we've eaten it. It's delicious broccoli.
Do you think that it maintains close to the same nutritious value as it has once you pick it?
Well, I got to say, with David, nothing beats fresh.
Right.
Nothing beats fresh. But it is still nutritious, and it still tastes really good, better than...
Just give away your excess. You'll make a lot of friends.
Yeah, I agree with David.
Sounds good. Let's go to the phone lines again. Larry in Charlotte. Larry, thanks for holding.
Hello.
Hey there.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is Larry Banana. Dave knows me.
Hello,
first
there.
Of all, I want to tell you that Dan and Dave are two of the best resources you could ever possibly have, and they've been doing a tremendous job for many, many years. I had a question for each of them, so I'll just say them, and then you guys can jump on them. Dave, for you, organic fire ant control. I know we've talked about this. And for Dan, is there anything in the works for the city or the county requiring cisterns for the large building complexes?
Fire ant control, we're just going to have to learn to live with fire ants around here. That's just a fact of life. There are some controls. The best one that we've found is the active ingredient is called
spinosad.
It's spinosad or spinosad. It's a organic product that works well, and it's pretty species specific, and it's a granular product you sprinkle out. It's even okay around animals. But again, there's some cultural things you can do. You can try to just avoid the mounds, for one thing. You can try not to bring in nursery stock or plants from elsewhere that have them already in the pots, and just learn to live with them.
That product works really well if you keep using it over the course of the time. But the other thing is, those fire ants, they'll just pop up right in the middle of your garden.
They will.
Yeah, and I'm a big advocate of being sort of sustainable and trying not to spend too much money on gardening, and I think it's just best to learn to live with them if you possibly can.
In community gardens, we sometimes have a problem with them because of kids and older folks that will run across them. We'll go to Texas A&M site, TAMU. They have something called the Texas Two-Step, which has an organic version. I mean, they're experts in fire ant control down there. The other thing to remember when you're controlling fire ants is treat the mound and try and get rid of just the fire ants and try to recognize the imported fire ant. The best control we have is our native ants. And if you spread a toxin that's going to take out all the ants, you create a biological vacuum. And the first things that recolonize are the fire ants. Mm.
They're more aggressive.
Yeah. You want to tackle that issue he had about the cisterns?
Well, I'd much rather talk about the product, by the way. I like the name. It's Come and Get It.
Come and Get It.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the cistern.
Come and Get It, y'all, is what we call it.
Unfortunately, I don't have an answer on the cisterns. I'm not sure about that.
Larry, thanks so much for your phone call.
Thank you.
Take care now. Charles on our Facebook page writes, second year for us. He's done the square foot style gardening, raised beds. Unfortunately, it's in a shady area, but he gets really nice greens. That's not surprising, is it? But he's not going to get good tomatoes or peppers or squash or zucchini back there.
Remember, we mentioned shade or containers are best growing plants that you're eating the plant, like a greens. Mm-hmm. It's a little wishful to think you're going to grow a lot of fruits or vegetables out there that are part of the plant. So need to move that box somewhere else if you can. And while we're on the square foot technique, a lot of folks like to follow that, and it's great, but I'm of the opinion it's too tight. You're planting too many plant population per area. So thin it out and you'll be better. You'll get more food that way.
I think so. That's one of the big lessons I learned moving here from California. A lot of those techniques were developed in California where it's very dry, or up in the Northeast where it's cooler. Here in the South with our hot, humid summers, you better have the traditional plant spacings, which are wider.
Mm. And also a raised bed is raised so that the moisture will seep through it quickly. More quickly. We have a problem with drought here in the South.
Yes.
A huge problem. So is that sort of contrary to the theory of raised bed gardening?
My feeling is if you want a garden and it takes you want to build something, do that. Anything that gets you gardening, that's great with me. I've seen some great raised bed gardens. I tend to not use them myself because they add an extra step.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. Nancy in Charlotte. Nancy, thanks for calling.
Hi. I am new to the area, moved here from Northern Illinois.
Welcome.
And thank you. And I want to put a garden in some areas where there haven't been vegetable gardens. Now, I wanted to ask you, a friend of mine in Illinois made these hills of a mixture of composted material and sand. And in that, we planted carrots and potatoes, you know, separate hills. But they turned out wonderful, the carrots, so sweet and big. And I'm wondering if that technique has been used here.
Oh, sure. Most people, traditional gardeners, would plant their squashes and cucumbers and things like that in hills. Literally, the soil would be mounded up to warm up quicker. We always, growing up, we planted everything in hills that way. And it just, warm soil made the seeds germinate so much quicker. So if you're planting seeds, hills are good. If you're doing plants, it doesn't make as much difference.
Nancy, good luck. We've got to go here. Good luck with your gardening. David, we need to get out and... if we haven't done it already, we need to turn the soil this week.
That's
is what
exactly
you're telling
right.
us. How about you, Don? Your best piece of advice to get started this year?
Get out there and get going.
Don't quit thinking about it. Quit talking.
Yeah, don't think.
For every
go
10,
garden.
Every 10 minutes on the computer, you need to spend 30 minutes in the dirt.
Right on. I second that.
David Blackley, gardening enthusiast, gardening teacher, owner of Renfro's Hardware and Matthews, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Don Bokelhide. Bokelhide, there we go, from Teaches Food Gardening at CPCC and also as a test gardener for Organic Gardening Magazine. Gentlemen, thanks both for being
with
us.
Thanks, Chris.
I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. You've been listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.